now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Tara Fraser. Today on the show, a subject dear to my heart, adoption.
We'll be speaking to Ryan about their experiences being a dad.
And Lucy's been catching up with events coming up in Bristol.
Some exciting stuff, all coming today, right here on Shout Out. So you look absolutely petrified of that microphone for a minute. Then.
I like to approach it, not for it to approach me.
I mean, it's got a lovely orange muff on the end of it.
Yeah, and it's got a nice blue light, so I know where to talk.
Did you do that on purpose? Because you've also, your headphones got orange. Like,
yeah, I paid extra for the extra orange muff, yeah.
So I know exactly what Steph's thinking. Oh my God, here we go.
It's a Scottish thing, isn't it? Saying nothing.
So actually, orange is more. I always think of Amsterdam because I've been there on their. What's it called? Is it Queen's Day? Something like that, where all the orange comes out.
Is that not a down to religion? Orange is that?
It is. It's royalty, isn't
it's
it?
The royal, right, royal okay. family is the orange family.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why it got to Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah. The orange men.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
Protestants came from that way.
Yeah.
Influenced Scotland and then Ireland.
So, Ez has been in Scotland. How did her haggis hunting go?
She didn't see one haggis and she's very disappointed. And, but I must say that they're thinking of putting haggis on the moon now.
With the first shot.
Yeah, they're taking some up. I think it's about half a dozen. Because they're quite prolific at the sex thing. And I think they're going to put them on the first moon landing. Six of them. Just, they reckon.
Can we get a section for
this? I'm watching Ryan's face. He's thinking, what the hell am I doing on this show?
Haggis is on the moon.
I know.
It was a bit of a running joke because Tara's Scottish, that haggis is real live animals.
Tara's not Scottish.
Yeah. I've even got tartan.
Oh, my. I bet you have.
Yeah, I bet I do.
So is Easter next? It'll be bunnies. And
Burns Night. It's Burns Night coming. Yeah. Come on.
Follow the theme. 25th of January. Yeah, Sunday night.
I don't think the bunnies are ever put away in our house. You know, the chocolate ones.
We know exactly what you mean.
I still have one.
Oh, fans of Lucy, we have so much mail for Lucy. She will be on later.
Yeah, people were winning rabbits at the Pride, weren't they?
Winning rabbits.
They had the...
Oh, yes. Sorry, I've just clocked what you mean.
Sorry. Yeah, my mind jumps everywhere.
I was being all sweet and innocent. the worst thing as well is that as much as a rabbit is an adult sex toy, it's also a wine aerator.
Oh, right, okay.
It's a make a wine aerator that you literally stick in like a cork in the top and you tip it upside down, which led to some interesting conversations around the dinner table when we were putting it in a wine bottle and someone said to us, "What's that?" I said, "It's a rabbit." And all the women kind of like spat their wine out.
Do you know it's also a fluffy little animal?
It is a fluffy, yeah.
Yeah.
See, I try and keep it all nice, and it's you lot that are smart, really, isn't it?
They're prolific, aren't they, those rabbits?
So, anyway, we'll say hello to our guest. Back again, I think. We've had you on before, haven't we? How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yes. Now, we thought it didn't occur to us that if you were here, one of you had to be at home this time round. So, Chris, I'm assuming he's listening at home, isn't he?
He should be. I told him to come in. Yeah, he should be listening.
So, now, you come in to talk. It's something that's quite dear to mine and Tara's heart because both of us are adopted as well.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, it's a subject that we're quite keen on. We try and cover quite a bit. So, but... Can you take us back a little bit? Because I know you and your other half have adopted. How long ago did you decide it was something that you wanted to do?
We wanted to do it. So I think when my niece was born, we kind of really started to think about it a lot. I went through a period of like worrying my niece wasn't going to wake up. And I was like, I can't do this. But then when I got past that phase, I thought, no, I actually can. So it was, we've always wanted to slightly, but never really.
Sorry, excuse me. That was me pressing the wrong button. Okay. Apologies.
I'll go home now.
Well, that woke everyone up. I was just knocked off.
Sorry, Ryan.
That's okay. So we talked about it a little bit, but it wasn't until like my niece was born that we really, really kind of like discussed it in detail.
So that didn't put you off?
No. Well the we can have her and hand her back. Yeah. So she's four now, and so about 4 years ago, we started really thinking about it.
So can you tell? Because I mean, it's brilliant that you have done it. Don't get me wrong, we know from having some of the fostering adoption agencies on the show, and also having people message into us. You know, a lot of LGBT people think, no, I can't do it. There's no way, you know, because I'll have to. It'll be such a hassle just because of my sexuality or whatever. Can you talk us through what your experience was like when you first did you have any of those worries, and were any of them founded?
No, not at all. That wasn't kind of even part of the question. Like, they didn't even question about a same-sex couple. There was like topics that you had to discuss about being a same-sex couple. So for example, not that everybody goes through it, but they asked about bullying and things like that you may have gone through. How will your child grow up knowing that you've got two dads rather than a stereotypical mum and dad? How will you deal with that? How will you tell them that it's I don't say normal, I don't like to use the word normal, but it's okay to have two dads rather than just a mum and dad? And the big question is that they ask is, what are you going to tell them when they start asking about their mum? Because they'll know that you need a mum. When that question comes up, how are you going to deal with that as well?
I mean, do they know they're adopted already?
He's three at the moment. So he's not he doesn't know, I don't think he knows fully that he's adopted. He knows he briefly mentions mum now and again. We don't stray away from it. We always discuss about it and always kind of like talk about it rather than straying away from it, because we don't want to put that to one side and then it come down the line and then he realizes he's actually got a mum. It's going to be worse for him to take that on. Rather than growing up, he knows he's got a mum, he knows he's got a birth dad, but he also knows he's got us. So we've kind of like treated it as like an extended family. So he's got his birth mum, he's got his foster carers. He had foster carers before us, so he's got foster carers and there is extended family as well. So that's how we treat it, and how we will treat it.
I don't know if your experience is that. I've known ever since I can remember I was adopted.
Yeah, I do as well.
I don't remember when I realised what it meant, but I've always, as far as I can remember, known what it meant.
I think the main difference, talking to my mum about it, is that there's far more preparation work goes into educating the people that are going to be adopting. It's not a case of, well,
you're pregnant.
Unlike people that have kids procreate, where they kind of get 9 months to prepare and then get dumped, you know, they get to the hospital, have baby, and then get kicked out of the hospital again. You get far more a knowledge around attachment style and how the child's going to behave and how they might push.
How long was that process? Was it ages from when you first engaged with the adoption people?
We started, so we had them this year, last year, probably 2024, end of 2024 is when we started.
Right.
And then about the attachment and how to kind of like parent. They say you parent in the same way, but you also treat them differently slightly as well, because they've gone through the trauma, they've got all the past experience, so you've got to parent slightly differently in some ways.
How old they were when they come to you?
They were 2.5 when it came to me.
Okay.
He was in the system since he was 1.5.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
Yeah, and the thing that we forget is what we need to remind ourselves quite a lot is, even though he's so young, there are things that will trigger him. Like if he steps out into the road and I shout, no, he'll get upset instantly.
Freeze.
Not so much freeze. He'll just like stand there and he'll just get so upset because I've shouted. But I don't know what that trigger is because I don't know the full extent.
Okay.
But that will be something that could be a trigger for him, that shouting. And that's what we've got to remind ourselves, that all these, even though he is so young, there are so many things that we don't know in detail.
That early developmental stage is so crucial.
And people think that he's so young that he won't remember, but they
do. It's embodied. It's not thought about, is it? It's so embodied.
Yeah.
It's a reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely a... an experience to go through. It's definitely something that you, as a couple or a solo adopter, whether you do it as a couple or solo, you definitely have to think about. It's not something you kind of think about, I want a child, and then go straight into it. You need to do research. You need to think about what you're going into, because it's not as simple as you sign up and you get a child. It's a long process.
Do you mind if I ask what were your fears going into it? I'm sure a lot of it was covered talking to them, and obviously you're now actually into it, but was there anything? You'd obviously decided you wanted to adopt and have a kid, which is brilliant, but there must have been some things inside you, like, did you ever think, I'm concerned about anything, or
in terms of like the assessments or the actually having a child?
Just you and your feeling. Were you apprehensive about any bits of it at all?
I'm a very apprehensive person. I process everything like down to the I's and T's and everything like that. It's just something that I do, and I think about everything too much. So I worried about everything. Everything that came up, I was like, did I say that right? You get interviewed and you have to have two interviews, do your homework and a workbook, and then you have six interviews. You have to do training and little things that you don't even think about, they will pick up. So for example, they brought some Polish tradition is when you go, because my husband's Polish,
right,
you have cakes or sweet treats or something when visitors come. So we wanted to introduce that to our social worker, to show that we do that, and that's our heritage that we want to bring into our child that we have. And I didn't have any. It was just after my lunch, didn't have any. And we discussed about past history, and then the next time they came, went, did you not have any because of your past history? And I'm like, no, I just didn't want any. I'd already eaten. But even simple things like that, so just not having something because of our past history, they'll pick up on and think, we need to talk about that. So it goes into a lot of detail.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, but how are you finding it? How are you finding it now? It sounds, from what I've heard from you saying before we were on air, it sounds like it's a very rewarding experience that you're going through.
100%. Yeah. It's, you have your challenges. He's a 3-year-old. He's a toddler.
Yeah. So he's going to be a handful.
He's going to test you. He's going to challenge you, but the moment that
is Poonami a real thing?
But it's the moments where I think the one moment I always remember is I picked him up from nursery, cuddled him, and he looked at me and went, I love you so much. And that's the first time he ever said it without being prompted. Not it prompted, but us going, I love you. It's the first time that he said it to me without, as I said, that prompt. And that, just those moments, those key moments where even like a smile or just little things, it just makes it all rewarding, makes it all worth it. All the questions and interviews, all of that.
Yeah. It's all done. Are you dad one and dad two, or do you use a different term?
Daddy and papa's another combination, exactly. Isn't it?
So I'm daddy, and then my husband, because he's Polish, he's tata, which is the Polish version of daddy. Because we plan to eventually, because he's 3 years old, so it's not as easy as speaking Polish and he'll learn it. You have to gradually feed him the information. So that's what we want to do with him. So we thought tata, keep it Polish.
So does that mean you speak Polish?
I know words, but I don't know. He knows, my 3-year-old knows more than I do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. It's a very hard language to learn. It's really difficult, but he's picking up slowly.
And did one of you have to stay at home permanently?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's quite a big thing, isn't it?
Now, yeah. It's the same. Well, each company is different, but for my company, it was the same as maternity leave. So you get a year off, you get the same amount of pay per month, etc., and it decreases, etc. Okay. I stayed off at the time. Well, my husband does earn more money than me, and it just seemed a bit silly for him to take the time off and reduce the breadwinner, if you call it, in the family. I decided to stay off. And I'm glad to be in control and know what I'm doing. So for me, it was a win-win.
And will you ever choose to run second? Sorry.
No. I'm an open book, so I think any questions. We, at the moment, because he's new to us, we've had him since May. I think we would. We would need, we've only had two rooms in our house, so we'd need to see if another child can be in the same room as him when he's sleeping, or whether we need to extend or move. If his birth mom has another child, we'll be the first people they call, because they like to keep the siblings together. If the child needs to go into care, we'll be the first people they call.
Do you mind if I, was that also part of the process? You know, them asking, would you be okay taking on a child you can't?
Yes. It was a very quick question. But yes, they asked that question, yeah.
Right, because I know, having spoken to some friends, they were like, no, I absolutely want a newborn. I want to raise them from day zero, you know. Whereas, of course, there's a lot of kids in adoption who are a lot older as well.
So. There's two types of process for adoption. So there's what we call the traditional, which is you go through assessments, you do your bump-ins in your transition, and then you adopt them. And there's another process called early permanence, where that is for newborns, majority. So you are kind of on a waiting list, and as soon as a person is identified being pregnant and their child is going to be in the system, they will call you and say, we've got a child in 5 days, we've got a child being born tomorrow, we got a child being born in 3 months. Would you be happy to take them on? This is the mum's background.
Well, that's definitely changed, because in 1978, when I was born, my parents were due to fly to Greece on holiday the day they got me. And they got a phone call that morning saying, we've got a little baby boy you need to come see. And they had to cancel their flight and came home with me.
Wow. And does the mother have any access rights? Because I know from my neighbours, they adopted and the child had to go every once a month or something.
Yeah.
And keep that family connection.
Yeah, so during the early permanence process, you're classed as foster carers in the first instance. And what we had to understand is that you are not guaranteed that child.
Yeah,
You have to be classed as foster carers, do the once a week, once a month, however many times they agree, family time, take them there. And then they work with the mum and dad and the family as well, actually, to see whether they can kind of like change, and see the courts will see that they are okay to go back to their birth family.
Yeah.
And then obviously when the courts happen, they then decide yes or no, and if it decides no, then the child can stay with you.
And did you have to go to family court?
No.
My parents had to go to family court to adopt me as part of that process.
I feel minded.
We do, the social worker does.
Oh, right.
But not the adopters, no. No. Right. We went to the family court to do a celebration hearing to officially say it's ours.
Right.
But the actual adoption order, the social worker goes to that, not us.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, can I ask, how has it changed in the way of contact? Because when I was under 18, in fact, the law changed. It used to be a case of they could never contact you, but if I wanted to contact, neither of you could contact each other, you had to contact social services.
Yeah.
And they used to make it that they would reach out to, you know, my real parents could have reached out to me, or I could have reached out to them, and social services would ask. And if they said no, there couldn't be any interaction.
Yeah.
Whereas they changed the law so that once I can always ask, and I'm legally allowed to know who my parents are, and if I want to go find them, I can. And when you turn 18, they can legally find out who you now are and where you are. Has that changed, or is that the same, do you know?
So throughout his life with us, we'll do, it's an agreement that we do letterbox contact. So we write letters to her, and she writes letters back. And we'll read them in a way for his age. So whether we spoon feed him information throughout the duration of the next letter. But I think it's still the same in terms of what you were saying about her reaching out. She can't reach out and find, like, say, I want to meet you. She has to go through the right channels.
Yeah.
And vice versa. I mean, we'll always be open if he ever says, I want to find out who she is, or see what she's doing on Facebook. I don't know. I'd rather do that with him than say, no, you're not allowed, because then he would do it behind my back. That's how I feel it would end up. So I'd rather do it with him.
Yeah. I can't speak for everyone who's adopted, but the one thing I can say, having had a few friends who are the other way, the one thing you're definitely doing right, in my personal opinion, is being open about him being adopted from day one.
Yeah.
Because I always knew and never, ever had a problem with it. But I do know some friends who didn't find out until they were like 20-something.
It's going to cause so many
problems. And the ruptures it caused and the heartache and the pain. I'd always say, you know, if you're adopting,
it's going to be so much easier for them growing up.
As far as I'm concerned, I don't know if you're the same, my parents, the ones that brought me up, are my parents. I think this is where we differ. I've not reached out to find mine.
I think have
you did, didn't you? That's a show in itself.
Funny you say about parents. One thing that I'd thought about before I came, one thing I would strongly, strongly recommend for any adopter is there's a twilight session where you can go to meet families who've had children who've been in the system. So you meet about what they, how they feel and their experiences. And that really opened our minds more and made us really strongly want to have that contact with his birth parents. And we actually met his mum.
Right.
And that was emotional, but it was the best thing we ever did, because we actually got to meet her. She met us, and she felt within 5 minutes, she said to his social worker, yeah, you're right, they are lovely people. And we had that good connection, that good vibe, that in the future of 5, 10, 15, however long it takes, and everybody's on the right path, ready, then we can meet face to face. And she went to the adoption order, and she told the judge to approve the adoption order. Yeah.
Wow. That's really nice.
Usually they go to say
that's
no.
That's very different from the 70s.
Yes.
We're
coming back 50 years.
That is amazing. Amazing how it's grown
it's
and
very
changed.
Different.
You weren't allowed to, the parents, the adopting parents and parents didn't used to meet.
My birth mother was threatened with going to jail if she didn't sign me over.
Yeah,
that's how brutal it used to be.
They're pushing for more face-to-face contact than letters now. Okay. That's what they're pushing for.
I think it has to be relative to the child, and the child has to be centred.
I guess it would also depend on the state of the real parent too.
Absolutely.
If they're like, I don't want my kid being taken off me, it's probably not a good idea.
No.
Anyway, listen, we're running over by an awful lot. It's a brilliant subject. It's definitely one we must have you back on.
Thank you.
If you'd be up for it.
Absolutely.
You'll have to come back and tell us how you got on in a few months or a year or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well done to you and your husband for doing it, because it's brilliant to know that it went so well, and B, that you're comfortable doing it, because you go back a decade. I wanted to, and I was too petrified to do so because of the stigma that's still around then. I have friends who did, got shouted at in playgrounds, picking up their kids from school and all kinds of things. So it's nice the world's changing in that way. So if you're listening and you're interested, I know we've got some info about it that we will put up with our show. If you get it through podcast, go to our website and look for this show, and we'll make sure that all the details are up there. But for now, thank you very much for joining us, Ryan.
Thank you very much.
Stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out. Back in a minute.
The Shout Out podcast.
That's Bloodline. That's by Alex, Aaron, and Jelly Roll, believe it or not, they're called as well. So I like
very
that
nice.
One.
It's,
yeah.
More of my music, that is.
Yeah, definitely. Steph goes, no, not me. No,
it was. I liked it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Bit of a thumbs
knees up.
Oh, I'm doing well. I mean, I can hear Lara go, nope, not me. You know what she'd like. So, Mr. Star.
Hello.
You are for giving us a bit of news.
I am indeed.
Cool.
Shout Out News, welcome along. A recent employment tribunal involving an NHS trust, a group of nurses and a trans woman has brought renewed attention to the complex task public bodies face when navigating competing protected characteristics under the Equality Act 2010. The judgment found that the trust had failed in its duty of care to its staff, whilst also confirming that no unlawful conduct was committed by the trans woman at the centre of the dispute. The case sits within a broad legal framework shaped by recent court decisions on the protection of gender-critical beliefs. The tribunal concluded that the NHS Trust failed to protect the dignity and rights of several nurses who raised concerns about the use of women's changing facilities. The judgment identified organisational shortcomings, including unclear communication, inadequate support, and a lack of effective management of staff concerns. These failings created an environment that the tribunal described as distressing and undermining for the nurses involved. The tribunal did not find that the nurses had acted unlawfully. However, it did record that some of the language used by the nurses towards the trans woman was hurtful, inappropriate, and transphobic in effect, even if it did not meet the legal threshold for discrimination. Examples included misgendering and comments that portrayed her as a threat despite no evidence of misconduct. These remarks contributed to offence and discomfort, and the tribunal acknowledged the impact of this behaviour. The tribunal made clear that no unlawful conduct was ever attributed to the trans woman, Rose Henderson. Now, play and protest have gone together for a long time, from medieval peasants turning their world upside down in carnivals and gesturing, through to the playfulness of hippies in the 60s or the dark humour of anarcho-punks in the 80s. There is a tradition of protest as fun, whilst retaining a precision focused on fighting the forces of fascism. In a provocative new essay, celebrated drag performer and writer Little Miss Hot Mess has issued a rallying cry to LGBTQ peace and environmental movements, saying embrace playfulness as a vital political strategy. Writing for LGBTQ Nation, she argues that in an era of rising fascism and stifling political orthodoxy, joyful, imaginative protest is not just beneficial but essential for building a more just world. The piece is a critique of what she sees as a failure of imagination within mainstream political organising, including some of the established LGBTQ plus groups. Little Miss Hot Mess contends that an over-reliance on consultant-approved, respectability-focused tactics promotes self-preservation over the systemic change required. In a powerful statement, the long-standing US LGBTQIA+ publication The Advocate has underscored the critical importance of robust, independent queer media for both community health and democratic integrity. The magazine, a weekly chronicle of global LGBT+ life and politics since its founding in 1967, issued a press release outlining its mission and the urgent need for economic support to continue its work. The publication detailed its relentless focus over the past year on documenting every anti-LGBTQ policy shift, harmful statement, and threatening federal action. It emphasised that this reporting is driven not by the pursuit of online engagement, but by a fundamental commitment to truth. We do this because the truth matters, the statement read. As a concrete example, The Advocate cited its coverage of the killing of 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good, a queer mother of three, by an ICE agent. The magazine stated that rather than adopting the initial narrative from the Trump administration, which labelled Good as a domestic terrorist, its reporting deliberately centred on her life, identity, and the factual circumstances. The Advocate said it stood with Good's loved ones and resisted attempts by far-right groups to discredit her and erase her queer identity. And finally, first aired in 1985 on the NBC network and over here on Channel 4 in England, S4C in Wales, The Golden Girls was from the beginning a gay favourite, dealing with issues such as homosexuality, AIDS, animal liberation, and all in the guise of sharp-witted humour from four older women sharing a house in Miami. As the iconic sitcom The Golden Girls marks its 40th anniversary, one of its original writers has reflected on the challenging environment its gay staff members face during the show's celebrated first season. Stan Zimmerman, who worked on the show with his writing partner James Berg, has described the profound relief of publicly coming out in 1985, despite advice to the contrary. In an interview with The Blade, Zimmerman explained that he and Berg began their tenure on the show about the four older women, played by Betty White, Estelle Getty, Rue McClanahan and Bea Arthur, without being open with their colleagues about their sexuality. The representatives advised revealing that they were gay, but the pair decided to do so in a local newspaper. Zimmerman emphasised the creative and personal strain of being closeted in a writer's room, a space demanding personal openness to craft authentic episodes. Imagine going to work and you can't divulge anything. How can you really bring your best talents to the table? He asked. Zimmerman also shares lighter memories from the cast, including dining with Estelle Getty, who he recalled was both lovely and exactly like Sophia, her famously sharp-tongued character. The writer's reflections underscore the complex legacy of the Golden Girls. While the show itself became a beloved staple for many in the LGBTQ community, for its progressive stances, it is also remembered for sharp wit and expert comedy timing. If you want the full fascinating interview with Zimmerman, do visit the website of the Los Angeles Blade. That's the news summary for this week. We have plenty more on our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt, and be sure to connect with LGBTQIA plus media through the week for more on what is affecting our rainbow community. For Shoutout News, I've been Terry Starr.
Shoutout News,
national and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
Oh, nice bit of Teddy Swims. Oh, that's called Bad Dreams, that one.
I think my mum likes him. I mean, I think she likes his music. I don't know if she likes him.
I thought I'd have a couple more sultry ones in this week. I mean, the next one, we might not have time to play the next one. The next one was Apatow.
Oh, yeah, with the kids there, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm not reading news.
Poor old
in a move that has confused everybody and left Terry gasping for breath. So, yeah, this is a new thing we're trying. So, but I really, really should, actually spotlight our star reporter, Vicky,
yes.
Who is now on, who is now our star events reporter. So we're trying a bit, we're going to be, if we can, get some like previews on what's going on, not just in Bristol, but also maybe Bath and Weston-super-Mare as well. The queer arts scene is insanely varied, and yes. To sort of just bring a flavour of what is coming up and what is going on. So we're going to be talking about, well, definitely one, Vicky. So do you want to sort of hi by the way.
Hello. Welcome back.
Thank
How are you?
Thanks for having me back again. You're just too good at this. So.
Well, if we get time, we must ask you about some of the things you've been up to since we last spoke to you, because you had some quite interesting stuff you were talking about before the show about Shakespeare. But we'll come back to that, because that's not what we're talking about, is it?
Let's talk about the thing.
Okay, yeah. I thought the first thing that I'd bring along really was there's a new play called Small Town Boy, which is running from the 28th of January to the 31st at the Western Studio at Bristol Old Vic. And obviously named...
Is that the studio thing on the side, not the main theatre?
You go in, it's in the same building, but yes, it's next to the main auditorium.
I haven't seen that yet.
It's a really nice space. There's some great shows there, a lot more experimental works and new works that are being championed by the Old Vic. And I think I've not seen anything there that I wouldn't recommend to a friend, if you see what I mean. So right. I think it's a great venue. So a lot of promise for this one. So obviously named, I guess, for the Bronski Beat song, but kind of telling that story in reverse. So written by an emerging Bristol-based playwright called Brenda Callis, who I've actually met. I did a writing workshop with her. She was amazing.
Oh, fantastic. Local talent, that's great.
Yeah, she's from Cornwall as well, so she's firmly from the southwest.
Yeah.
And it's the premiere, actually, of the play. So, starring drag artist Elliot Dritten, who's also known as Fruit and Fibre, which is a great drag name.
Such a good name.
Yes. I haven't seen them perform, actually, yet, so I would be interested to see what their regular drag actors like too.
Yeah.
I'll just read some of the kind of basic story. So it's in the wake of their boyfriend Leo's unexpected death, Edie, a drag queen from Bristol, travels down to Cornwall to meet the family they never knew of. Expecting small town homophobia, Edie instead finds a community they didn't expect. As Edie's arrival awakens new emotions and old tensions, drag begins to trickle through this seaside town and truths begin to pour out. This is a play about grief, community, and growing up queer in a rural town explored through the explosive storytelling medium of drag. And I guess it kind of appeals to me because you think of that stereotype of that story of somebody going back to their hometown or small town as being entirely negative, but it sounds like this might subvert some of those expectations.
I think,
so I'm curious about that.
Well, the stereotype is really interesting because I was at a storytelling event that we might have talked about.
I wonder who runs that.
Who does that? But there was somebody there who said that they had grown up in, or they had lived as queer in a small town in East Yorkshire, and they had experienced tolerance and acceptance, but not necessarily community, and that really, really,
yes,
struck
I
a chord
about that.
With me.
That was interesting.
That's kind of the cliche, isn't it? That's the cliche sort of youth.
But how do you get
youth growing up experience
in a small space? I mean, you know, if you've got a village, how many people are going to be a village? 1,000 people? Less?
Maybe.
Well, with 1,000, you can get a sense of community, surely.
Community.
Yeah, but queer community within that. That's what I'm thinking about. It's like, you know.
I mean, I'm curious about this because I grew up in the flesh pots of South Manchester. And so, Bright Lights Big City. L Street was there from the start.
Did you ever get to the Hacienda before it closed?
I'm too young, unfortunately.
Okay, well, there we go.
I would have had to sneak in at the age of about 11.
Okay.
But I guess, I mean, did any of you guys grow up in...
I left the day after my last exam.
You left your small town?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious about, what kind of prompts that move,
don't
I guess.
Fit. You really don't fit.
I can say I moved to Bristol after having a job that required me to live in smaller towns around the UK. And yeah, Bristol to me, and that was at the ripe old age of 34. And I was like, no, I want to move here because there is queer life here. And that was definitely a thing for me. So I can't imagine, and that was me at the age of 34, I can't imagine what it'd be like growing up. But it seems like this play might subvert that sort of play with those kinds of expectations.
Yeah, and I suppose that's what's really brilliant, about using drag as a performance medium, I suppose. I'm really curious about how that's going to be used to, there's something about it that almost resonates with, do you remember the film Pride?
Yes.
Yes.
Where there's that sort of an acceptance. Yeah. And
we're off to Swansea for a great big les off.
Yeah, there were lots of comments about lesbians. Was, yeah. What about lesbians?
It was good, yeah.
So doesn't she walk in and she goes, I think your lesbians are here. Or,
something like that.
Yeah. So, but that's an interesting sentence on that. Drag begins to trickle through the seaside town.
Exactly. You know,
Interesting way to describe it, isn't it?
Yeah, this kind of subversion of manifestation. I'm really curious. I really want to see how this plays out.
Now I'm thinking, will we see some? Will there be some? Will everybody start getting their drag name and start putting their heels on?
Is it a big
on?
Cast, you know?
I'm not sure, actually. This is the most information I have, so I think there'll be some surprises.
It tends to be smaller.
It's quite a small venue there. Yeah. So. I think I'd like to. I mean, I've noticed that I think the Old Vic are really increasing their LGBT and queer programming. Mm-hmm. Certainly over recent years, I've noticed a lot more. I mean, Old Vic, if you want to completely dispute that and say, no, we've been running LGBT programming pretty constantly for the last 10 years, I'm very happy to be corrected. Yeah. But it seems like there's a real uptick there in the amount of queer friendly programming they're doing.
And I went to the Scratch Night last night, actually, at the Old Vic. That was also in the West End, and that's where you have 10-minute performances of new work and work in progress. And I've been to two nights in a row, actually. They're two in a row, and I think roughly sort of a quarter at least were kind of queer themed or had queer performers in them, or there was a good number there of, so they're also supporting those emerging artists as well.
Really great. So one to watch then. Excellent.
Yeah. So that's Small Town Boy at the Bristol Old Vic Western Studio from the 28th to the 31st of January, and then it's touring the Southwest, so it'll be in Exeter, Plymouth and Falmouth too, and then it finishes with a run at the Pleasants in London in March if you can't make it to any of those.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. So wider regional appeal. So fantastic. Excellent. Cool. What else have you...
What else?
I know you've got something else.
I know you've got something else.
This is a rhetorical question. I'm like, what else have you got, Vicky?
No, it's great. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is kind of a slightly different type of performance. It's called Scritch Cabaret. So we've all heard of the Bristol Boys, if we're Bristol based, I guess, as a drag show.
Yes,
The next one of that is on the 29th of March, and that sells out really quickly. So
yes,
if you want to see the
and
I highly recommend going to see the Bristol Boys. They're fantastic.
That's 2 days before my birthday, so... Oh.
That's a good birthday plan for me. And so this is another night produced by that team. So that's Kurt Savane, who's the upstage manager, and Oliver Assets, who co-hosts and co-produce the Brizzle Boys. And they are really fantastic champions of the kind of drag and burlesque and cabaret performance scene, I would say. And they're really so keen to support it that they've provided the space for, that's almost like an open mic for queer performance artists.
Oh, amazing.
So it's second Sunday of the month. It's at the Old Market Assembly Rooms. You get to see... you know, baby kings, baby queens, or like more established performers doing something completely new and different. It's free, it's kind of pay what you can, and they're really, really egalitarian. They split all the money, the proceeds, equally between the performers to give them that start and that support, which I think is so important at that early stage to get that kind of little bit towards your expenses, at least, and
that's
so
amazing.
On. So, yeah, and obviously, like... I'm slightly vested interest because I have to admit I'm the guest host for the first half of the February one, which I'm very nervous about.
So you're going to be emceeing a drag show?
Well, yeah.
A cabaret show.
I'm not very razzle-dazzle, am I?
Counterpoint. Sorry?
My good counterpoint.
You could go along, yeah. Tara, as a talent counterpoint, and now for something completely different.
So I think I'm going to have to step up my game, because the last host I saw was a performer called David Puck, who was hilarious, a little bit like... Frank Sidebottom, had a big fake head on and did all these amazing kind of weird miniature pop songs. I've got a lot to live up to. But that sounds
amazing. Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Was there any sort of other performances that sort of really stuck with you when you went and saw it last?
To be honest with you, it was a couple of months ago. It was a good variety, and it was good to see kind of new performers getting up and doing that. I remember there was one person got up and did their first ever singing drag performance.
Amazing.
And sang live. So seeing things like that is really special, actually.
The perfect way to do a Sunday.
Yeah.
It is absolutely a great Sunday activity, helping somebody get their first drag wings.
Exactly.
And then helping them fly. Yeah. So that sounds really, really awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks very much.
No worries.
That was good. Hopefully this can become a running thing. Andy, did we pass the...
I love stuff at the Old Vic.
Okay. Yeah.
I can come back as long as I preview stuff at the Old Vic.
No. I mean, that's just the first one. I'd never been there. All the years I lived in Bristol, I've never been there.
Get yourself to
And my husband took me to go see a show. I can't remember what it was called, but basically it was... it's a 1980s based thing, but it was actually based in a time when we'd solved like all of the medical issues in the world. What you didn't actually know was it was done because they were cloning people, and you follow the journey of the kids growing up as clones. And it was a very surreal thing. And I remember going to the theatre and thinking, this theatre is beautiful.
Was that an adaptation of Never Let Me Go?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Read the book and seen the film.
Absolutely brilliant.
And
they did it so well. So the same actors played the adult version of themselves and the kids, and they just did it changing the lighting from warm to cold.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And there was no microphones or anything. And I've never been to a theatre and they've not been mic'd up.
Yeah.
So it was such a different experience from going to a big theatre like the one we've got here, the Hippodrome.
Yeah.
And the West End in London, you know. It's so much more intimate.
So do you think he'll be booking Small Town Boy? Do you think he'll be taking you on?
I'm curious. I'm very curious. Yeah, yeah. But don't stick to the office. I totally agree with you. I mean, Bristol's got so much, but so is Wyoming. But we're so known for all of our eclectic things we've got going on, aren't we? Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of want to do is there is so much, we kind of want to like highlight stuff. So if people are like overwhelmed, because you can get a bit overwhelmed with it, which is a great place to be, by the way. If I remember how I was 10 years ago when we were really struggling to find stuff, it's great to be overwhelmed. But we kind of want to highlight stuff with this segment and go, this is a running thing. We really think it's good. We give it our stamp of approval.
So they can contact us if someone's got an idea they want to put forward for a future show.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd absolutely love to. Yeah, any creators now, we'd absolutely love to come and preview your show and interview you and talk to you about your process. And you don't even have to ask us. We might actually be knocking on your door to do the same thing.
If any of you listening are in that situation, you're putting on events or shows or whatever, and you think it would be of interest to our audience, get in touch. studio@shoutoutradio.lgbt is the email address you need. And if you email it through, we'll make sure it gets to Lucy and Vicky. And they might have to reach out and come say hello.
We can do that. Yeah, absolutely. Yep, definitely.
So, now, can I ask you about Shakespeare?
Do you want to ask me about Shakespeare? Go on.
Yeah, go on. Because you were talking. Are you okay to talk about this on the radio?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
So, because it sounded absolutely fascinating. You said you'd gone for an interview.
Well, an audition. It was really fun. There's an improvised Shakespeare company that are called Impromptu Shakespeare, that just improvise Shakespeare style plays from scratch from audience suggestions and things like that. And they were auditioning for new players. So I went to the workshop last night to audition, and I think there were about 15 of us, 16 of us, and I was getting quite nervous because I've done some improvising before and comedy improvising, but to do it in like cod Shakespearean language.
I was going to say, is that what really it is?
Daunting.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
Can I put you on the spot? Could you give us an example?
Oh my goodness. I got into it really quickly because they warmed us up by getting us all starting to the and thou. And then built it from there, and we were playing all these I found myself lying on the stage at one point going, oh, the shame, I cannot forbear it, and all this kind of is this a ghost I see before me, and all this kind of things.
I was joking to Vicky before that all you have to do is just say yonder for no good reason, yeah, and then that's it just it unlocks your inner Shakespeare and you're like,
yonder, nay and thee, I think you can get by
forsooth as well. Forsooth.
Perhaps we'll have to get Vicky to do some lessons. We can do the news in Shakespeare style.
Absolutely, do the news in Shakespeare if Terry permits. I'm looking for validation over from Terry. Yeah, he's good with it. Yeah.
So we've done it in Polari once, haven't we? Martin Spalasi, who wrote
that. Really good. Yeah, that's good.
And he literally first sentence came out, and that was it. Everyone was laughing so much, you just couldn't hear the rest. Have you found out? Did you get?
I won't find out for a while. It's going to be at least another couple of weeks, I think, before we find out.
But if you do get it, does that mean you've got to go brush up on your Shakespeare type stuff?
They're amazing. They do this whole academy. So if you get through the audition process, you then go to these intensive classes and courses and start. And they train you up specifically to do the shows, and then they have a casting pool that they can cast their shows from. So it's an exciting process.
And are the shows actually scripted, or are they the whole
point?
No,
completely improvised. They just throw Shakespearean tropes in. You need to know your kind of standard characters and themes and situations that come up in Shakespeare plays, and all the, you know,
so being in disguise. Tara's sharpening her axe as we speak.
With my accent, Shakespeare.
We started with haggis, and we will finish with the Scottish play. Tara's there, she's like, no, don't talk about the politics. The politics of that is really, really dodgy.
Absolutely.
I mean, improv stuff is absolutely great. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but Bristol Pride have one. I don't know if it's on this year or not, but it's called Murder He Didn't Write.
I did a quiz.
I think it's actually slightly rebranded and going on tour again. I've seen adverts on Facebook for it. But basically, the audience pick like the room, the murder weapon, and a few other things. And they all cross-gender. So the men play the women play the men. Mm. I don't know if that was just a pride thing, but that was certainly what they did in mine. And they ad-lib it as they go. And every now and again, the storyteller stops and then makes you decide, does this happen or doesn't that happen? And just throws it at them to do. And they just react, and you end up with a completely different show every single time you go see it. But it's brilliant. I don't know how they do it. I'm not sure I could think that much on the spot.
Genuinely, if anybody... I did improv when I first... I started some improv courses when I first moved to Berlin before I moved to Bristol. I've moved around a lot. And it's... Honestly, I can heartily recommend it as a way to get over your kind of... fear of performing or like fear of public speaking and just meet new people, because you just get thrown in at the deep end and you learn such amazing skills and kind of spontaneity and being present and stuff. So if anybody's looking for a new thing to do, then go and do some improv courses.
What do you do if you do have a complete brain freeze?
Then the whole point is you're a team.
So someone else.
Just got to trust the people around you. Sometimes you're the leader, sometimes you're the follower, sometimes you're being carried.
Bit like
and you've just got to trust that process.
Bit like radio, yeah. We're all looking at you, Andy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of used to, but I mean, the most we cover is like a 5-minute bit, and it's fairly easy to talk, especially when there's a whole group of us here. I couldn't imagine doing it on a stage.
You'd be a bit of a natural, actually. I think you'd be quite good. Yeah. All we'd have to do is mention some sex toys and make that reference and have it go completely over your head. Steph just dropped it in there.
No idea what you're talking about.
Utterly deadpan, and poor sweet Andy didn't realise what we were talking about until 30 seconds later. Listeners, if you missed that bit, it was at minute 8 of the show. If you want to go back and check it, we were absolutely creased over in the corner.
Yeah, yeah, there have been a few times we have been stumped. I mean, Terry's the worst at stumping us. I played it. You can hear it on the first show of the year when we did the panto, and I played a clip from the year before when you talked about needing you couldn't use your tablet to write on because you needed it for later because it was actually your Viagra, if you remember. Completely threw us. So anyway, that's it for this week. But thanks to Lucy and to Vicky for that. It's lovely to have you back again, Vicky, by the way. That's it for this week. If you want to hear any more of the show or any previous ones, they're all available as podcasts on good podcast providers, as well as on our brand new website as well.
To listen again, head to our website, shoutout.lgbt.
Shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Oh, I can't even read. I'm so Scottish.
We'll be back next week for myself and the rest of the team. Say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Rabbit.
Shout out.
LGBT Radio for you.